and a pleasant good afternoon, and welcome back to Fans in the Pro. Mike Haas, along with Charlie Long, as Deuce McAllister's on his way to Los Angeles as the Saints left early, as they often do. I've stayed behind because I'm working at the Superdome, and the beginning of the Taylor Swift concerts begins tonight, three straight nights. And I don't know if anybody was looking at Hobby Lobby or Michael's or any of those stores for sequins, but they've got to be out because the gates are open, and it is sequins from one end of the plaza to the other. So I'm looking forward to tonight. It's been a lot of work this week getting everything ready and getting excited for this three nights of concerts, and looking forward to it. And Charlie, do you know about Taylor Smith? I'm old.
I don't know
a ton of her music.
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny, Mike. I think the most I know about her is actually from the Travis Kelce stuff. Like, I'm not a huge music head, so I'm more of a, obviously, sports guy. So,
yep, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it because it's been a heck of a week. We've had, and for those who are just kind of wondering, you know, I mean, it's not over. It's like an event within an event, and that event being merchandise sales. If you don't have tickets to any of the nights, you can still come to the Smoothie King Center tomorrow and Sunday and buy merchandise. 10 to 8 Smoothie King Center to still be a part of the action. Utilize this time to talk about college football. Tulane plays tomorrow, but LSU, who would have thought that we'd be here in a week 9, number 8 LSU against 14th-ranked Texas A&M, literally with so much on the line. A&M the first to 4-0 in the SEC. They've won 6 straight. LSU's won 6 straight. They're 3-0, the two only unbeaten teams. There are 5 teams with 1 loss and 4 teams with 2 losses, and the two of those 4 is Alabama and Ole Miss with 2 losses. And so I don't know that we would have picked this one out, when the schedules came out, but it would have a big one in College Station.
Yeah, for sure, especially after week 1, Mike, because this something that we've talked about a lot throughout the week, is that both these teams have kind of taken a similar track, I guess you would say, where, you know, obviously LSU drops their season opener to USC in Las Vegas, but also A&M had a huge season opener as well, top 25 matchup against Notre Dame that they lost at home in College Station. And then both these teams just rattle off 6 straight victories, and they get better every single week. I know Coach Elko has come out and said this, and we haven't really talked much about it, but that they haven't played their best ball yet, which, considering this team is 6-1 and 4-0 in the SEC, it's a little bit kind of nerve-wracking, I guess you would say. But the A&M LSU matchup, I can't wait for it. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about Tulane and North Texas as well, because it's almost like an inverse there with what both these teams want to do. North Texas is a high-flying offense, and Tulane's defense has been really solid over the last few weeks, specifically, especially against Rice, what they did last weekend as well. So, but first, with this A&M-LSU matchup, Mike, a couple things that I'm really keen in on, and D'Attelier and I previewed this as well. The Texas A&M defensive front versus LSU's offensive line is going to be awesome. Like, if you're someone who likes watching the trenches and the battle, like, up front, you're watching an LSU offensive line that's given up 2 sacks all season, both of those came against South Carolina, versus an A&M defensive front that has multiple draft picks, specifically like Nick Scowerton, who's probably going to be, you know, maybe if not the first defensive end off the board in the 2025 draft, definitely one of the top 3 guys taken. Mike said that he doesn't see him falling out of the top 20. I agree. He's had tons of production, started with 10 sacks at Purdue last year, and then he transferred to A&M. He's already got 4.5 sacks this year. He plays typically on the left side of the defensive line, so he's going to be going up against, in all likelihood, right tackle Emory Jones for LSU. But then on the other side, Shamar Stewart for Texas A&M going against Will Campbell. So it's going to be a really, really fun matchup in the trenches. LSU's offensive line does not give up any sacks. They've given up 2 all season long, and this is an A&M defensive front that may have the most talent that LSU will face all year as far as defensive line goes.
And it feels like, this is just from afar, right, because just from watching that, after the injuries to the running back position early on, it was like they're looking, trying to find that person, and it just feels like they've realized, let's just lean – into Garrett Nussmeier. Just lean into Garrett as much as they can, and I feel like it's kind of turned out exactly as they would have wanted. Yeah, I mean, you want to always want a strong running game, but man, they, as they looked around for that person, just lean hard into Garrett Nussmeier, and he has been awesome.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. But the thing for me is, like, for LSU to win this game at College Station, Caden Durham needs to keep performing. Right. And he's been awesome for them as well. Like, as a freshman running back that Coach Kelly has said is not at 100%, he's closer to 80 to 85%, and he's still going for over 100 yards in an SEC game. Like, the kid's got grit, the kid's got toughness, he's got great vision, as Coach Kelly has praised as well. Someone that they're going to have to rely on in this game, because when Mike and I were previewing this matchup, it feels like whichever team ends up being one-dimensional in this game is going to be at a disadvantage. For LSU, stopping the run is going to be gigantic. You got to force Connor Wegman to throw the ball. I'll say this real quick, Mike. If Connor Wegman throws the ball upwards of 40 to 45 times in this game, the Texas A&M quarterback, I think LSU fans will be feeling really good, because that means they get off to a good start. They kind of eliminate the run game a little bit for A&M, which has been their bread and butter this year. Le'Veon Moss has been outstanding, 674 rushing yards on 105 carries already this year, 8 rushing touchdowns, 6.4 yards per carry. So if you can kind of slow down that rushing attack and force Wegman, he's a talented quarterback, don't get me wrong, but making them one-dimensional, that's something that Coach Kelly keeps kind of highlighting every single time that you go into one of these major matchups. If you can force a team to only pass the ball and not being able to run it, like, that's going to be gigantic for LSU's defense in this matchup.
It'll be a special time, 6:30 College Station. So LSU will then be open, as they often are, as they get ready to host Alabama. They weren't probably expecting Alabama to have two losses, but man, just probably the two best, and I hate to label, but the two best home field advantages in college football: Death Valley, LSU, and then the 12th man at College Station. And to me, it's such a big one for LSU, because if you look at A&M moving forward, A&M moving forward is LSU, then at South Carolina. Now, South Carolina could be a little bit of anything, right? South Carolina has given everybody a hard time. Then it's home, New Mexico State, at Auburn, and then it's that season finale with Texas, but it's going to be in College Station. So not the toughest of schedules beyond LSU, which makes it that much more important for LSU Saturday night.
And this is why we keep calling it another playoff game, similar to what it was with the LSU-Ole Miss game when both those teams had one loss. It's like a survive and advance moment, because if you get that second loss, you kind of run out of breathing room, right? So you can't really pick up a third loss, especially with how college football has been this year, where you already have a ton of teams with one loss and a ton of really good teams with two losses. So you don't want to be in that number. You want to stay with that, you know, one loss, keep the winning streak going. That's for both of these squads. But yeah, I agree with you, Mike, and I think it's going to be an awesome game in College Station this weekend. Have you seen the uniform matchup as well? This is a quick side
note. No, I actually haven't.
All whites versus all blacks for A&M. It's like two alternate uniforms. And it's like the same uniforms that LSU wore last week, and it's going to look really clean. But that's obviously, you know, just a little side piece.
Wow, I actually the all white initially wasn't something that I liked initially, like when you just went boom. But it's kind of grown on me now. All black at College Station, 6:30. You just never know; it's still going to be pretty warm down on that football field. But it's going to be a good one. It's a great. It's been a long time, but when I covered. When I was in Lubbock, I covered Texas A&M and Texas Tech. So this is back when both teams were part of the Southwest Conference. So we're talking about a little bit ago, but that is a unique atmosphere at College Station.
One of my good friends is an A&M grad, and I've always actually wanted to go out to a game in Kyle Field with them. I haven't been yet, but I've heard it's an awesome atmosphere, and especially for these top 15 type of matchups, it's going to be rowdy. For sure, in College Station. But LSU, you know, that's the thing that we kind of talked a lot about previewing Arkansas, was the veteran leadership they have in that group, where they weren't really willing to overlook Arkansas, and it could have been a potential trap game. They just dominate. They win by 24 points, move on to the next one, right?
Yeah.
And so I think they have the leadership and the veterans to kind of not necessarily look past the atmosphere in College Station, but I don't think they're going to be too worried about it necessarily.
We'll talk a little bit about Tulane. We'll talk about some college football, the top 25, as well as game one of the World Series. A little later in the show, but we're going to shift gears, talk the Pelicans. Kurt Heelan, lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports at Basketball Talk. Talking about the Pels next here on Sports Talk, WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Mike Haas and Charlie Long here on Fans in the Pro. I'm at Caesars Superdome, and Deuce McAllister is en route to Los Angeles, and Charlie is back in the studio, and we're talking Pelicans as well. The Pelicans get their first win as they beat Chicago at home, did so without Zion Williamson, and now they're going to do some time without DeJounte Murray. And Kurt Heelan joins us now. Kurt's the lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports. And Kurt, man, that, you know, opening night was hard enough. We get the news it's no Zion. Now he's going to be okay, but the Murray had surgery today. I think 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. That is not the debut that we had in mind.
No, especially for a Pelicans team that frankly deserves a break from the basketball gods. They had a few too many injuries in the last few years, and could use something to go their way. And it's a long season, and you can be fine through this. I think you saw that on opening night, but it's not ideal. Just with all the new faces, you just wanted time with everybody there to build some chemistry, and it just hasn't come together yet. Now it's not going to come together until, you know, December, basically.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, Kurt, but one of the best things actually from that opener, and I think you'd agree with me, the debut of Yves Missi. And, you know, the rookie center out of Baylor, like, a lot of us were not really sure what to expect from him. We figured he would come off the bench, which he in fact did, but playing 23 minutes in his debut, only 2 fouls, which was a really nice surprise when you see what happened with Zach Edey in his opener in his NBA debut and how he fouled out in like 15 minutes or whatever it was. But also all the production, he stuffed the stat sheet, and, you know, the defensive prowess that you can see and the potential that you can see from Yves Missi was on full display against the Bulls.
Yeah, and he was like, he came into the league considered a project, right? Like, he's got a lot of talent. There's a lot there, but he's kind of raw. He's gotten thrust just because of the numbers situation. He's been kind of thrust into a larger role, and he looked great in that first game. And if he and Daniel Theis can give you solid 35 minutes a game, and you can play a little bit of small ball with that, you know, suddenly you're fine, or at least good enough until a center you might really want comes available on the trade market. But that's nothing serious is going to happen there for a little while. You know, this point in the year, everybody's, you know, the first couple of weeks, everybody's, I love our roster. Our roster is great. And reality sets in pretty quickly for some teams, and stuff will start to shift, you know, again, closer to December. So if he can really, if he can continue that, if that wasn't a one-off and he can continue to grow and develop, that's do it fast, that's a huge plus for this team.
I'm just curious, Kurt. So the Pels are out west. They're back-to-back with Portland tonight and then two at Golden State. And when I ask this question, people think I'm being negative about Zion, and I'm not. I think that guy can do whatever he wants to do. He's one of those rare players that if he has the ball on the wing and he says, I'm going to the bucket and I'm going to score, there's very few that can stop him. And there's a handful of people that you could put on that list. But I think as we've seen through the, you know, early years that he does, and he gets pounded. He just gets pounded. Yeah. Sometimes it's a foul. Sometimes it's not called. And so I ask this question, and just does he need to develop some shot of his own, 13-footer, a 10-footer, a drive popping shot, you know, something that can – where he can kind of take some of the pressure off having to drive so much, only because he gets pounded. I think he could be awesome, but he just gets pounded.
Look, the best players develop counters and develop, you know, a range of ways to shoot. And for some guys, the Kevin Durants of the world, that comes naturally and easy. But to use an easy example, LeBron, and you let him shoot long, you know, from three or longer shots early in his career. Like, go ahead, take those. Now you really can't do that anymore. Like, he's a legitimate shooter. I think it would be helpful for Zion to have more counters. The more counters, the more ways you can score, the better. It just opens everything up. So I think it would be a huge addition for him to not only develop it, but gain confidence in that kind of shot. But like you said, what you can't do, and Blake Griffin did this over the course of his career, but remember, Blake early in his career dunked everything and had to develop that shot, and it took a little bit of time, but by the end, he'd kind of developed a range of shots. It would be great to see Zion follow more of that arc, because he's going to have to. You know, at some point, your physical skills diminish a little, even his.
Yeah, 100%, Kurt. And looking at the Pelican schedule now, back-to-back games at Portland before back-to-back games against Golden State. First, we'll dive into Portland real quick. I just want to get your thoughts on them. I mean, this is a team that was picking in the lottery for a reason last year, 21-61, finished at the bottom of the Western Conference. You know, they have some good young pieces. They made the move for Denny Avia as well, who, you know, Pelican fans will remember, they played a game against Washington last year, Kurt, where Denny Avia just lit them up. He had, like, a career game. But outside of that, like, Scoot Henderson, and, you know, they drafted Donovan Clingan to go with DeAndre Ayton, so they have a nice kind of pair in the front court. They have some good young pieces, but they haven't necessarily just gelled early on. And, I mean, this is a good time for the Pelicans, I think, to be facing this young team before they can gel and kind of get them early on.
Yeah, exactly. Look, They're chasing the Cooper flag this year, right? They're playing capture the flag, and they're not going to be good this year. They're going to play those young guys a lot and see how they develop, and they do. Shaden Sharp, Anthony Simon, like, they've got really good athletic young players, and it just doesn't all quite fit together yet. And Clingan, too. They're just going to develop these guys over time. Scoot, and I was so high on Scoot Henderson coming out. I'd seen him in the G League, and it – talk about a guy whose game has not translated and hasn't developed the other things he needs to go with his game. I think this is a big year for him. The next year or 2 years, really, he's going to have to, because he hasn't lived up to the number two billing yet. And I'm not writing a 20-year-old off. Like, you know, like it's,
right.
There's plenty of time. But I think that there's a lot of that going on. Well, they try to see what they can get. And, for you know, look, they're chasing the top of this draft, and that's not, by the way, just Cooper Flagg. Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper. Like, this is a deep draft, five deep, with really good players who could be future all-stars, if not franchise cornerstone players, and they're not the only team thinking that far ahead, but you're right. This is the time to catch them, because they're not good. They're just not.
Right.
I watched part of their opener, and this is the time to catch them.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, for as underwhelming as last year's draft was, it definitely seems like this one's going to be awesome. But we'll get to that months down the line, Kurt. I wanted to ask you about, you know, that opener that Portland had against Golden State, who the Pelicans are going to be playing up next. Yeah. I think it had it on full display a couple things, that Portland's defense still isn't any good, giving up 140 points to Golden State. And so I think that's kind of a thing for Pelicans fans to keep an eye on tonight, is the Pelicans offense should be operating at a high level against a defense that's very vulnerable. But also, you know, kind of what you can see from Golden State, who the Pelicans will face after this two-game trip to Portland, and what you're kind of expecting from them in kind of, I guess, the era post-Klay Thompson.
I think they're going to still be figuring that out for the first part of the season. Steph Curry is Steph Curry, but is Jonathan Kuminga going to step into that secondary role as a scorer on offense? What, you know, their defense is still going to be good. Draymond is still a good defender. They've got athleticism on that side of the floor. They've got guys actually probably upgraded, frankly, on that end of the floor, because Klay Thompson isn't the same defender he once was. You can't leave him open. That's why he's going to help the Dallas offense so much, but he is not the same defender he once was. I think they actually got a little better this offseason, just with the players they brought in. Buddy Hield can still shoot. They brought in a little more defense. I think they're still a pretty good team, and that's a good challenge for the Pelicans, because you guys know this. After you get past Oklahoma City and Dallas, and I'm going to keep Denver in that list for top of the West for now, even though that was not the most impressive opener, and Oklahoma City looked great last night. The rest of the West, out down to Portland, is tight, and those are the games you've got to find a way to kind of maybe at least get a split in of those two. I think it's two, right? In Golden State.
Both of them.
Yeah. Those are the games that are really going to matter, because that is such a tight bunch when you talk about all the teams in the middle, the Memphises and both Los Angeles teams and whatever. It's going to just be such a clump in the middle, and those games are, even now, even this early in the season, those games will matter come at the end.
And a matter because, you know, this team last year, the Pelicans, were so good on the road. Better than they were at home. 28-14 on the road, 21-19. Hard to believe, really, at home. But it feels like at 49-33 last year, you know, struggled a little bit down the stretch, lost five of their last 10, that we've been here before. Take injuries out of it. Does this team have the tools, and it feels like clearly they do, to take that next step, to not be that play-in, to not, you know, to not be fighting towards the bottom? Or to, it feels like they do.
I do. I think if everything, and this is where the injuries kind of sting a little bit, but I think they absolutely have the ability to be anywhere from 4-5, maybe 5-6 for sure, but avoiding the play-in and being comfortably in and getting a first-round matchup where they like, versus, like you said, having to go through the play-in. And the problem with going through the play-in, even if you do and you're the 7th seed right now, you're going to get, well, Oklahoma City, I think, probably wins the conference, but you're going to get Oklahoma City, or you're going to get Dallas, or you're going to get somebody else really good at the top. I think New Orleans is ready for that next step, but that's where coming together as quickly as you can and winning in the regular season matters, because, like I said, the West is 4 through 12 is going to be really tight, and maybe 4 through 13, because that Wembanyama guy in San Antonio is going to win them a few games. He's going to be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Kurt, the West is razor thin, kind of as you're mentioning here. But and as you mentioned, the Thunder, obviously the favorites, and we saw what they did to the Nuggets on their opener. But Denver's going to be up there at the end of the season. Dallas, as you mentioned, as well. Like, who are some of these teams? Minnesota will probably – I don't even know if they'll take a step back necessarily. I think they'll still be in the conversation. But who are some of the teams that we're not necessarily talking about early on that you expect to be in that conversation in the Western Conference? Kind of the surprise teams.
Don't sleep on Memphis. And I know that the betting markets kind of eventually caught up with this, and there's probably some fans out there listening. Look, this was a team that won 50-plus games 2 years in a row, and then were just decimated by injuries and obviously the jaw suspension last year, but also had, I believe, more games lost to injuries than any other team. They were just, you know, Ja only played 9 games because he had to have shoulder surgery in it. Desmond Bane missed time. Steven Adams missed the entire season. They're asking a lot of Zach Edey, who you mentioned earlier, to kind of step into that Steven Adams role, and he's a big physical guy who's not going to get calls as a rookie, so there's going to be some nights like that. But he's, I think, built for what they want him to do. I watched him at Summer League, and my impression was, first off, dude is a legit 7'4". He's huge, and he just knows how to be 7'4", if you know what I mean. Like, he just knows how to be big and in the way, and kind of is a little more mobile than you think. But all that said, I think that that's a team with Desmond Bane, with everything they've got, and Marcus Smart's there now, that's a threat. That's a top four threat in the West. I think that's somebody you can't sleep on. They're gonna bounce back, and Ja Morant's gonna remind us, as he did frankly in the opener with a couple plays. It's just a walk-in highlight. He's just one of the most fun players to watch in the league.
And Kurt, we'll have you on multiple times throughout the season, I'm sure, as well. But, you know, we're one game in, for some teams, two games in to the 2024-25 regular season. And in the Eastern Conference, I mean, is anybody going to come close to catching Boston? It just feels like it's Boston and then everyone else.
I really hope that by the end of the season, I think New York and Minnesota are both, it's just going to take time to mesh, and I'm not sure. I'd like to think New York got a little better with Towns, but there's a lot of questions there about their defense and depth. Philadelphia is great on paper. Let's see if they can get Paul George and Joel Embiid into a game at the same time. I hope so, because we know Boston's really good, and I just like to see them pushed by, even if it's Cleveland coming together. If Evan Mobley can keep playing like the way he did opening night, you know, they can be very good. If he takes a step forward, I want somebody out there to push them, because they're just going to be really good. And the West is going to be such a gauntlet. And I don't want Boston to be able to kind of waltz to the finals all healthy and coasting and rested, and then play, you know, the survivor of the gladiator games out of the East, out of the West, I mean, and then, you know, have this huge advantage in the finals.
Well, Kurt, we appreciate your time. It's going to be a heck of a season, and you know we're thrilled to have the Pelicans on our air. I don't like so much that already on the 27th we got Portland at 5 o'clock, Saints at 3 o'clock. We don't need to be playing the same days near the same times, but
that's tough.
You know, it's just it is what it is. No. But we're excited as heck to have them on our air and to have you on our air, and we appreciate your time.
I look forward to doing it a lot this year, guys, and I think it's going to be a fun year for Pelican fans. I think that this is. You've got one of my League Pass favorite teams. I just think they're going to be so much fun.
Thanks, Kurt.
Cool. Kurt Helan, lead NBA writer, managing editor for NBC Sports at Basketball Talk Sports. We'll be right back. Fans in a Pro, Mike Cost, Charlie Long, back after this. WAMFM.com, always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back, Fans in a Pro, Mike Cost. I'm coming to you from Caesars Superdome. Deuce is en route to Los Angeles with the team. Charlie is in studio as we get you ready for the Brian Kelly Show at 6 and the All-State Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup at 7. We want to thank all the good folks at Magazine Pizza for feeding our Sports Talk crew on game day. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine, dine in or delivery, the best gourmet pizza selection in town. Magazine Pizza also has pastas, sandwiches, wings, and salads. MagazinePizza.com. Talked about LSU and Texas A&M earlier. Tulane, 3-0 in conference against North Texas. So North Texas, it's a big deal for them because they're 5-2 overall. They're 3-0 at home, 2-1 in conference, but they are on ESPN2 for the first time in 10 years.
Wow.
So if you like the color green, you'll want to tune in because it's the Mean Green versus the Green Wave tomorrow. But you got to get up early. It's one of these 11 a.m. starts. It's also their homecoming. Who has homecoming at 11 a.m.? But that's television, right? And so, but it's Tulane playing good football of late. But you got to because you got two. There are three undefeateds in the conference, Tulane, Army, and Navy.
Yeah.
That is good stuff, man.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Stuff.
And with North Texas, let's get into a quick preview of them. As I mentioned earlier, they can put up points in bunches, Mike. I mean, the fewest points they scored all year was 21 in a 66-21 loss at Texas Tech. Other than that, 52 points at South Alabama, 35 against Stephen F. Austin, 47 against Wyoming, 52 against Tulsa, 41 against Florida Atlantic, and then 44 against Memphis. And Memphis, who was the preseason pick to win the AAC, I mean, they put up 44 points against Memphis. The only issue, they give up 52. So their defense is a little bit vulnerable. This could be a game where Darian Mensah and just kind of, I don't want to say slices and dices them, but it feels like one of those games where the Tulane offense has a strong performance, and it's going to be up to the Tulane defense to be able to contain this Mean Green passing attack led by Chandler Morris, the quarterback, who, by the way, Mike, top three in FBS in passing yards already, 2,424
good
yards.
Gosh, man.
Yeah, he's put up numbers in bunches, 23 passing touchdowns. He has thrown 8 interceptions, so if the Green Wave can force some turnovers, that would be nice, obviously. But it just feels like one of those games for Tulane where if they can kind of control the clock, Mekhi Hughes running the football, Darian Mensah making some good decisions, kind of preventing those turnovers. The Tulane defense has played so well recently. We had Coach Summerall on after the UL game where, you know, they went into Lafayette and beat my Raging Cajuns 41-33, and he really challenged his defense after that game. He said he didn't think the defense played very well, and ever since then, they've been on a roll defensively. They've given up 10 points, 20 points, and 10 points in the last three games against South Florida, UAB, and Rice. So they've been playing great football. It's kind of like strength versus strength, right? The Tulane defense right now going up against, you know, that North Texas high-flying offense. So should be a really fun matchup on ESPN2.
So check out this switch here. The Raging Cajuns, Ron Guidry, Lafayette, Karen Crow High School.
Louisiana Lightning.
That's right. He was on the 1981 Yankees that played the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's the last time these two teams have met in the World Series. They're meeting tonight, Game 1 in Los Angeles. I mean, we think of this old, you know, grizzled rivalry. 1981, I mean, I was like, who was on the rosters, right? So Tommy John. So most people are going to go, wait, I thought that guy was a surgeon.
Right.
I thought he was a surgeon, right? Lou Piniella, Aurelio Rodriguez, I grew up watching him with the Senators, Dave Winfield, Reggie Jackson against Dusty Baker, Steve Garvey, Bert Hooten, Steve Howell, Steve Sachs, and it's just unbelievable. I, you know, 1981.
Yeah, I'd like to think my Astros have a little bit of something to do with that recently, but in all honesty, the Dodgers have been playoff chokers. Like, they haven't even made it to the World Series except for that bubble year, you know, the COVID year where it was a shortened season. So, you know, they're back, and now you're looking at the Yankees, and the boogeyman was out of the way, so to speak. I joke with Steve about that. The Astros weren't there to knock them out of the playoffs, and they took care of business. You got to give them credit, taking out the Royals, and then obviously the Guardians on the way to the World Series, their first World Series since 2009. So it's you know, one of those matchups. Obviously, the TV execs are all excited, New York versus L.A. But, you know, when we were talking with Scott Sanders about it, I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it had to have been yesterday. He kind of mentioned, you know, if you're looking at starting pitching, the Yankees have the advantage there. The Dodgers may have a little bit of an advantage in the bullpen, but then both these lineups are so star-studded, it's just going to come down to some key moments. I think it's going to be a really tight series. I would expect either six or seven games.
Yep. Game two tomorrow night from Chavez Ravine. Maybe we'll just check it out since I'm heading to Los Angeles tomorrow. Then no game on Sunday as the Saints play the Chargers. And we'll wrap things up here on Fans in the Pro. Mike Austin, Charlie Long back after this. WWLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Some final thoughts. It all begins 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday with Steve Geller and Charlie Long with First Take. Then it's Bobby Hebert at 1 o'clock. Kickoff at 3 with Deuce and myself. Charlie, week 8 shouldn't be must wins, but you cannot afford 6 straight losses.
Absolutely not. And you got to figure out a way to come out with a win here. And this is a Charger offense that really hasn't been performing that well. It's been a defense that's been excellent, so it's going to create a tough task for your offense, but you're also getting some pieces back. It goes back to what we were saying early, Mike. You know, the injury report today, only a couple guys out, and that's just Nick Saldivari and Cedric Wilson. But outside of that, you're returning a lot of pieces that you've been missing in this 5-game losing skid.
Yep, that Spencer Rattler will get his third start, and Atlanta lost last week, Tampa lost last week. You got to keep shortening that gap, and that starts with the win at Los Angeles. My thanks to Charlie Long, not only in the booth, but a co-host today. I'm coming to you from Caesars Superdome. We got the first of 3 nights of concerts, and I'll head to Los Angeles tomorrow. Of course, the Pelicans out west as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Fans in the Pro, we got the Brian Kelly Show coming up next, and it's the Allstate Sugar Bowl Prep Football Roundup. Have a great night. Thank you, Charlie.